Log Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio. My guest for this morning is author Patricia Dunn. Patricia and I will be discussing about her debut novel titled Rebels by Accident. It is a coming-of-age tale of an American-Egyptian teen looking for love and adventure living with her grandmother in Cairo during the Egyptian uprising. Good morning, Patricia. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, very well. Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
Wonderful. I'm excited to have you on the air. Rebels by Accident is a wonderful read. It is funny and entertaining. It is a rite of passage story laced with plenty of wisdom that transcends all cultures. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It took a lot of years to write and a lot of support and help to get it to where it is. So thank you. I appreciate your opinion on that.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
In 30 seconds or less, right? Well,
Take as much time as you want to learn about you.
Okay, well, I was raised in the Bronx, New York, which, even though it's part of New York City, it was very small town feel. Everybody that was in my neighborhood, except for my family, was born in Italy. All my friends were born in Italy. So we were considered the Americans on the block, kind of, so the outsiders, which is where I kind of think my whole interest in writing happens, because feeling like you're always on the outside of something gives you something to, like, you know, write about often. So I think that was kind of connected. And then after that, I knew that I wanted to travel. So I went out to the West Coast, and I went to college for a little bit in New York, went to the West Coast, and became an activist in a lot of different ways, and got involved in a lot of social justice issues, traveled around Central America, traveled in the Middle East, lived in Egypt a little bit, lived in Jordan. I went to the West Bank and Gaza in the 80s during the first intifadas, then moved back to New York where my family is, and then have been raising my son, who's now 13. I can't kind of believe that, which, by the way, he said that it's a good book, not the best he's ever read, but a good book. In short of it, I teach now. I've been, writing for years. I teach writing at the Adult Institute at Sarah Lawrence College, where I also went to graduate school. And what else can I say? And I guess, that's me in a nutshell. Oh, I guess I've also, which may be of interest to some of your readers, I converted to Islam almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. When I was a student activist, my then very best friend, and now very best friend, but in the middle we got married and had our son, he was Muslim and very, very progressive at UCLA, and we were, involved in a lot of social justice issues. And I was what I called then a very, hardcore Marxist, which I think is a whole other religion. But in trying to talk to him about why I thought all religion was bad, I did a lot of studying of Islam, and it actually spoke to me, and that's why I decided to convert. So that's, was my story around that, because it was something that talked a lot to my sense of, justice and love and a lot of that. So I came into it from that perspective. Basically, in terms of my writing, I've been, a struggling writer like we all are. And like I tell all my writing students the first day of class, I said, if you have any choice, run now. It's too hard, too painful. There's not a lot of payback. But if you have no choice and you have to do this, then get as much support as you can to get through this. So I'm lucky to have a lot of good friends who are writers. And,
fantastic.
Yeah.
So when did you discover you have a love for writing?
I Well, I think it kind of discovered me. As early as fifth grade, I remember I wrote a poem, and it was actually about Christmas. Mm-hmm. And my teacher liked it and put it into some student journal that they made at the time. And there was, you know, an attention. My brother was actually a child actor. And I think that moment when I wrote that piece was the first time that I kind of felt like there was a little bit of a spotlight on me. Mm-hmm. So I think that was my first role of feeling like, okay, I'm going to be a writer. But then writing really started coming from my, you know, when I used to write notes to my parents when I wanted them to hear me or when I wanted to convince them of something. And seriously, you know, like I come from a, you know, like an Italian-American family. We're all loud. We all talk. But a lot of people in my family, you know, they do a lot of writing. So when I wrote things mm-hmm. down on paper, I was taken seriously. And, wow, they listened. So I saw a lot of power, I guess, in that. And then when I got to junior high, I had a wonderful teacher who became a mentor who really saw something in my work and really encouraged me. And because of her, I really started taking it a little bit more seriously. But from mm-hmm. that point, you know, I went back and forth, and through a lot of the things I've done in my life, there are times where I wanted so much not to deal with being a writer because of all mm-hmm. those insecurities and fears that I was pre-med mm-hmm. at one point. You know, I was going to do about anything but write. But like I said, you know, I just don't have a choice about these things.
Well, you have written several articles over yeah. the years that were published uh-huh. in many different publications,
yeah,
and one among which... Yeah, among which is the Christian Science Monitor and so forth. And
yeah,
one of
yeah.
the things that you worked on was quite interesting is as part of the Muslim Progressive Values, most recently a best-selling anthology about love, Inshallah.
Oh, Inshallah,
tell us a little
yeah.
bit about it. Yeah.
Oh, well, that, I have to say, is it's a wonderful anthology. The two editors that put that work together And what I love so much about the anthology, besides the work, I mean, there are stories in there from Muslim women who have all different types of backgrounds, and mm-hmm. it's basically, they're all writing about stories of love, for whatever mm-hmm. that means to them. But what was so empowering about that anthology, it became a best-selling anthology. Mm-hmm. It's still doing extremely well, and the editors had a really hard time at first getting anybody interested because the publishing world was saying anthologies don't sell.
Right.
And they, you know, were able to get around that and do it anyway. And they proved that they do sell if, you know, because people do want to hear these stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, and I've told the editors this, that when I was asked to write a piece for them, I wrote this piece, and they... You know, asked, they said, oh, they loved it, and but they wanted me to make a few edits here and a few edits there. And the process went on for months and months and months. You know, and I've written a lot of various, you know, articles that have been published and here and there, worked with a lot of editors. But mm-hmm. so I got to the point where I was almost like, okay, that's enough with the editing. I don't even want to do this anymore, you know?
And, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm glad I stuck with it and didn't, like, you know, get frustrated and pull the piece. But, you know, our writers and we have big egos or we wouldn't be doing it. Mm-hmm. I was able to push past the ego, and it's been a wonderful experience being part of that anthology. I mean, they were touring in the winter, or it came mm-hmm. out around Valentine's Day. And I in New York, I was able to go with them to a few places and read from my piece. Mm-hmm. And there was an audience at Columbia of 150 people. Mm-hmm. And then there was a small bookstore in Manhattan that almost went out of business. And it survived. It's a women's collective. And there were so many people there. People were standing in the street. And this was in the winter in New York. And to see that, and also to see so many people come because they were in support of this anthology, mm-hmm. and the fact that not one question was, you know, like against us because, you know, we identify as Muslim,
right.
or, you know, was just, like, remarkable. And it made me feel like, well, maybe there is change happening in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I tell everybody it's called Love. You know, I love Inshallah. It's a wonderful anthology, and you get it on Amazon. You should definitely pick it up because it's a beautiful book.
Wonderful. What was the motivation behind all of your writings?
all of my writings. The motivation. I think it's just the way, you know, they'd be very, I mean, I don't know about it for all. I mean, sometimes I would be, you know, there'd be topics I'd be assigned to write. But usually it was about, it ha- I mean, something for it to work, something had to speak to. I mean, it really is kind of this, it's an internal thing. It comes from your kind of your heart, your body, you know. It's very, it's always been a very hard thing for me to force. Which is why when I was doing kind of that more straight journalism, it just wasn't for me because I wanted to write about the things I cared about. And sometimes I didn't even know when I would start. Like this book, I in no way would have ever chosen to write in the voice of a 16-year-old. Okay? It came to me. I was doing a writing exercise in a class, and this voice, you know, just started coming to me, and I kept trying to push her away. And I kept trying to make the narrator older, and I guess the teenager in me is still alive and well. Like I say, you never graduate from high school, which I think is probably true. Probably more like middle school. But so it wasn't so much a choice. It was just that this, you know, her voice of the character Miriam just came out like a friend of mine joked and said, sounds like you're channeling her. and then the struggle really was how to get to know her. You know, there was this voice, but, you know, she, unlike a lot of the others of my nonfiction, which was really pulled from a lot of my own personal life, a lot of Miriam, you know, there are elements and a lot of her emotion, the things I could relate to, but there is a lot about her that isn't me. And so it was a very interesting experience that really, you know, I mean, it's the kind of cliche thing where your characters kind of tell you their story, but it really did happen this way. And her friend, her grandmother was someone who, in the book, who I absolutely is like my, one of my favorite characters in the book. And she is, a composite of a lot of very strong women that I know. My mother-in-law, my mother, and also my son, who's Egyptian American, comes from a very strong line of women, in Egypt, and I kind of wanted to put a lot of those that history, you know, into this character without her sounding, you know, like somebody who is just, you know, going to be there to kind of give long political speeches, which is the hard thing when you're writing about anything that does have historical significance, because it's very hard not to sound like you're trying to. I want people to love the book, and if they learn something, that's great, but I don't want to feel like I'm teaching. You know, or otherwise, I mean, I don't want to read those kind of books, right? So I know that was a long answer to your question, but...
Well, that's fantastic. We certainly want to know what's behind the thinking, the thought process, and so forth. How was the transition like to writing a young adult novel?
Well, like I said, it was very difficult. I mean, at first, you know, her voice was very easy, but then it started because I when I finally said, okay, I'm not going to resist this. And when I started writing this book, I mean, now young adult, not everybody wants to write a young adult novel because that's who's reading books and who's buying books. At that time, that wasn't the case when I started this book. And I was resisting the whole idea of writing a young adult novel because I wanted to be taken, you know, as a serious writer and didn't think I would be. And then I gave up on that and said, look, I got to write this story as the story is going to be. And the hardest thing to transition was to make sure that I was, like, getting it right. I mean, we've all been teenagers, we've all been there, but to be a teenager today, I mean, even the research that I had to do in terms of getting, you know, would, you know, I mean, I had a preteen in my house, but I'd ask my friends, I had a lot of my friends, teenage kids, read the book and give me feedback. You know, I'd go on Facebook and I'd say, all right, is this word outdated? Do people say cool anymore? Do people say this anymore? And then you're always afraid if you use something that, like, you know, when you're writing a book and it takes 6 years to do it, you know, what was said 6 years ago may not be said now. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of that. That so, I mean, it but then again, it started to be, it did feel more natural after a while than I thought. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting question about transition. I think, you know, and I tell this to my students all the time, write whatever you stories. We all have our stories that we need to write, and you have to write those. And don't write because the market tells you that this is what's selling. Because that can change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be stuck trying to work on something that your heart's not in. And so it's so hard to do. So do
right.
something that, you know, you feel like is important in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this story became very important. I mean, someone said, oh, it's like, you know, when you put a book out, it's like birthing, you know, a child. And I said, well, for me, it's been more like kind of raising a child
mm-hmm.
and trying to get the child through college and then trying to get this child to go into the world and hoping that, you know, she does well. And I think that's kind of the way it feels, which is why this whole process afterwards, now that the book's out in the world,
mm-hmm.
is more emotional than I expected because there are,
yeah.
you know, people now judging my kid, you know? So,
right.
Yeah, so that's been an interesting process.
Well, it sounds like you have a tremendous amount of passion in what you do, and certainly the title itself, Rebels by Accident, in talking with you just now, I could sense that tremendous amount of passion that has driven you to the point where well, you got to write this book, and it's a very interesting, entertaining book, and it's a fun book to read as well. So tell us, why did you write Rebels by Accident?
The voice came to me, the character, and I wanted to write a story. I really wrote the story for my son. What I was noticing in the material that he was reading when there was a section when he was in public school and when they were studying Egypt, it was all about ancient Egypt. And, you know, he's Egyptian-American, he's Muslim. He had several incidences, and we live in, you know, an area that's, you know, outside New York and people are open-minded, supposedly, and whatever that means. And he was, you know, attacked a few times for being Muslim. And he's very strong in his identity. And so he was able to, you know, always speak up for himself and we were able to deal with it. But I was hearing about more and more stories. Well, first, like I said, there weren't many stories where there were kids who were, you know, American and Egyptian, and so I wanted that. But I also wanted, you know, a story for a lot of the kids that I was starting to meet, whether they were, you know, Egyptian or Muslim or any nationality or background where they were treated differently and like the other. And I wanted a story about what it would be like to be one of these kids and what that sense, because I kind of identified a lot when I was younger with being on the outside
mm-hmm.
and how you figure out who you are when you really don't know much about who you are and your family is even trying to protect you from who you are. So I think there are a lot of motivations. I mean, in the
mm-hmm.
end, you know, one word would be for my son. And also I think that I would like to see a lot more work out there about people, whether Egyptian or Afghani Americans or whatever, and that told from there. I mean, a lot of the books that are out there, and they're great books for young adults, always seem to have the main characters, you know, from other countries, and the West comes in and saves them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted a story where it wasn't anybody saving them, but people saving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Miriam kind of and her does that in this, you know. And the original story took place all in the United States right around 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of nowhere, the character decided to go to Egypt. And I remember that a very defining moment in my life was when I first went to Italy at 16. I had the opportunity to travel with a friend of mine and her family. And being outside of the United States and just seeing how much people are alike, but also different, and just seeing that there was a whole world outside of what I knew changed me forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that happens also to the character in this book. And when the book was finished, or I thought
mm-hmm.
it was finished, you know, I then started thinking, well, wait a minute. I don't want this just to be partly in Egypt. I want her to really experience who she is, you know, in Egypt, and I wanted to get to know, you know, her family and her background, and I thought a lot about my own grandmother and how I learned a lot from her that my parents weren't able to teach me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I think grandparents were always able to be better parents than parents because we're too close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started happening then, and then I started getting more and more interested in reading a lot about what the youth were doing there, especially with social media. You know, I mean, you know, the youth in Egypt, as in a lot of, you know, the world and especially the Arab world, were using Facebook, yeah, to talk to their friends and, you know, and to be social in that way, but they're also using it to organize themselves. And they were, I mean, way before the revolution in Egypt, you know, there were thousands of people were protesting and organizing and supporting unions and, and doing all of these things. And so much of that was because they were able to use tools like Facebook. And I wanted, and comparing that to pretty much what a lot of teens, you know, were doing here. And I think there are teens that do use it in that way, but a lot of it is about, you know, style of hair, Justin Bieber, or whatever that is. And that was very, like, it was important and very inspiring to me. And I thought it'd be inspiring to a lot of young people that you can make a difference. So then the book was done again, I thought. But there was no major event until the Egyptian revolution happened. And yes, it's all about me, so I thank people of Egypt for having a revolution so that I could actually have that in my book. but then all of a sudden, that's when the book really started to take meaning to me, because I realized that that's what the book's about. Not only a revolution on the outside, but what happens on the inside to all of us.
Right.
And I think, you know, there's a word that gets translated a lot in the wrong way, called jihad, and jihad means that it's our struggle, it's our personal struggle, and that we all have that responsibility to do what we feel is right and to help others. So, and I think that that's a lot of what, you know, the struggle that Miriam was going through herself in this book, and that's why it turned into the story it did. And I also was working with a wonderful woman called Evelyn Pazio, who just was able to really, you know, guide me through, because when I thought that book was done and that was it, and then all of a sudden I realized, okay, this major event has happened in Egypt, so this has to be part, it's like another character in the book, and her guidance really made a big difference in helping me really pull it all together. So I'm very grateful to her for that.
Very interesting. Because what I got from the book is, we as teenagers at one time, and to all the teenagers right now, we all go through the same challenges, the same excitement, the same wonderful experience that we thought the world has to offer. And at the same time, we go through the same naive period in our lifetime as well.
Oh, and of course.
Yeah. So having said that, the book transcends that from a standpoint of it breaks the cultural barriers, because, of course, depending on what background you come from, you certainly have the confinements of a specific culture, so to speak. But having said that, everyone encounters the same challenges, the same rewards.
And that's why I think it was so important also for me, you know, like, okay, I'm, like, talking big themes and all that stuff, but really, you know, it was important for me to have this girl and her friend, you know, like, fall in love and have a crush on a boy. And because that, you know, especially, I say for teenagers, but I think even, like, as adults, you know, no matter what's happening around us, you know, when you do have that moment where you fall in love or you think you're in love, that seems to transcend everything else.
Right.
And so it becomes almost as equal as, like, these major world events.
Right.
And I think wherever you are, those kind of moments are very similar for all of us. I mean, I think that's the common thing about humans, you know, right? We all have that ability, you know, to love and to feel that kind of passion, as you said earlier. And I think that was very important for me to, that's what I wanted this to be in this book as well, so that, you know, if I picked it up and, you know, when I was a teenager living, you know, in the United States and I really didn't have any interest in Egypt or anything in the world, that part would be something that I could relate to. And I don't know how successful I was with that, but that was, you know, also the fun part for me was writing those scenes, and that part of the book was, I think, I enjoyed the most, because, like I think I said earlier, I think I'm still a Well, I actually said 16, but I think I'm still 13 in a lot of ways. And, try to hide it, but, you know, it's very kind of hard to get past that, which is nice because, you know, when you're, there's some things that are really wonderful about being that age where, you know, mm-hmm. the first time you fall in love, I mean, even the first time that you get your heart broken, as horrible as that may mm-hmm. feel, there's something special about that, you know? You know, that's, I guess, my optimistic, well, you know, way of looking at things, but...
Well, during the teenage years, we go through a period of the most innocent time in our lives, but
yeah.
at the same time, it's the most rewarding and exciting time of our life as well. And as you know, whether we're a teenager or we're an adult, the two separate but equal forces that governs our decision-making process, love or fear.
Yeah.
And if we allow love to exceed fear, we'll experience harmony in everything we do. And your book shows that in real life, real situation, of course, in the context of a fiction, but certainly at that moment in time, every moment in time is a conscious choice, a conscious decision that we have to make on which direction we're going with. And so I think that's quite interesting in terms of the rebels within ourselves, and of course the rebels by accident in terms of the situation that we are presented in the environment, so to speak, in this case, the revolution and whatnot. And at the same time, you never stop learning.
No, exactly. You never stop learning. If you're lucky, you realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you're, you know, a teen, everything is so new. That sometimes when we're younger, we try so hard to act like we know everything because
mm-hmm.
everything is so confusing that we want to believe that we know or have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're lucky, we kind of will grow out of that and realize we don't have all the answers, but that's actually really correct. I mean, there's a lot of fear in the unknown, but there can
mm-hmm.
be so much wonder in it. And actually the best things I've ever done and my best experiences in my own life have always come from places where I was put in situations that were new and uncomfortable and,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's when you do grow. Otherwise,
right.
what else do you do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what you're saying is true. We never stop learning. I think that sometimes we will shut ourselves off from that, and that's
mm-hmm.
very sad. And I think when we don't, there is still a lot of beauty and wonder in the world. And I think that's kind of why, you know, people have done, and they're still struggling because revolutions don't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
there's a lot of inspiration to be found in, you know, what people do as groups and as individuals. And I think what you said before about everything is a conscious choice,
mm-hmm.
I think that's so true. I think, though, it takes sometimes longer for some of us to realize that,
mm-hmm.
That we do have that kind of power over our own lives. And that
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, especially when we're younger, and I think I hear people that are my age that still worry so much about what other people think, or they're so fearful that it's easier for them to judge because if they, you know, it makes them just feel more comfortable to think that there's the other or there's the enemy, you know. I mean, there's always got to
mm-hmm.
be the bad
mm-hmm.
person or bad guy, and mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that way, you know. And I think that, you know, if more people were able to see that, and I think a lot of people do, but even more, I think that we wouldn't have the wars that we do and a lot of the other stuff that goes
mm-hmm.
on and the atrocities, because people would see how much we all have in common, and there would be a face to things that are done in our name, you know,
mm-hmm.
as Americans,
mm-hmm.
that shouldn't be done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
coming back to your book, how did you come up with the various characters?
Well, like I said, Miriam was just a divine intervention. I mean, you know, she grew slowly into different, you know, I can't even really explain how she just actually came through these. I was in like this writing class, and this wonderful playwright, Cassandra Medley, I've given writing prompts. I work with my students all the time because I think shutting off your unconscious and not thinking as a writer, especially in your first draft, is the best thing you can do. Because there's so much that's there that we need to kind of like get past, our own critics and everything. And if we can do that, we can really, really reach our creative selves. And when I was able to do, so I've given exercises, but doing those exercises in her class, and when this voice started coming out, that was great. And then her best friend, who is an important character to me, originally, Miriam, also, her best friend in the book, has a facial deformity where she can't smile. Physically, she's not able to smile. That was something that was true to Miriam, but then I thought it was too much on one character, and all of a sudden I gave it that attribute to her friend. But when I was writing that, I was really writing it from the point of view of when I was younger, I never smiled, just naturally I didn't smile. And maybe it's growing up in New York, I don't know, but, you know, you know, when you grow up in New York, you don't trust, you know, and you're riding the subways, especially when in the 80s and 70s, you don't trust people to smile, right? So I never smiled, but a lot of people always misjudged me because I didn't naturally smile. They either thought I was, like, you know, mean, or they thought I was, there was something wrong, or so. I was very curious, and then I found out later that there is, you know, that there's actually some people are born with this, and it made me start thinking, well, here Miriam's being judged for, or misjudged by these kids at school. She's bullied because, you know, they don't know her and they have an idea of her. And then her best friend is also being misjudged by the way she looks. And that whole idea of people judging others, you know, especially young people. And that's why we're hearing about all these things that are happening in this, you know, in this country with kids who are being bullied and you know, these horrible things that kids are doing to each other, probably out of fear, and I don't know, the things that are maybe happening in their own families, but that idea of judging others from the, you know, because of what you think, and from a place of ignorance, I thought was something that I really wanted to explore. And then her best friend, Deanna, just, I had a, it was named after a good friend of mine who, I haven't seen since I was 14, 15 years old, a teenager myself, but there was just a lot about that spirit of that friend that Deanna, like, started, that character started to, like, take over. You know, I mean, they don't look alike, mm-hmm. and they're very different in many ways, but I wanted that friend to be the friend that Miriam could trust, but also who, like, loved everything that Miriam was trying to fight. You know, like Deanna, like, loves everything Egyptian and loves all the stuff that's not part of her, but that's probably why, you know, she can, but she's even attracted to Miriam as a friend because she's, you know, in some ways she glorifies her, and that's another side of it. But I wanted Miriam to have this friend that could see all these wonders about her, and I wanted Miriam to see all these wonderful things about her friend that they couldn't see in themselves. Because that sometimes when we can't see the great stuff about ourselves, it's really important to have people around us that can show us that. So those characters came from that. And the male characters were tough because, you know, just wanting to get them right. And they just started coming from, you know, teenage men that I knew and just adult men and people and, you know, and then... like the grandmother character, you know, she just eventually just started talking for herself. But my mother-in-law and my mother, both their voices, a lot of the times I could hear things that they would say. And they would just kind of like meld into this, you know, my mother's this Italian-American from New York. And my mother-in-law was, you know, born in Cairo and lived here for many years, but pretty much was like lived in Cairo until she was in her mid-20s and then went back there later on, and now she's back in the States. But, and actually my mother and mother-in-law do live together now, which is a whole other story. but there's just something about their voices that just kind of took over the character who's the grandmother. And so that's how she developed. And I'm kind of, you know, fumbling over my words here because sometimes we don't even know how these characters happen. They just start, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to shut off enough of my conscious mind, and that's what I think when we're first writing first drafts of things. I teach high school students in the summer writing as well, or teach, actually, I kind of facilitate because they don't really need to learn. They already know it. I just, hopefully they can figure that out. But one thing I say is, don't think. look, you have to try and just, like, let your unconscious as much take over. And that's why we, you know, doing things, I did a lot of free writing where, you know, I would take prompts and just, like, time myself. And whatever came out, I just let it come out with no censoring. And, you know, all these different kind of tricks kind of the trade so that my thinking mind wouldn't judge what needed to be written on the page. You know, later on when you revise, then the editor can come out and you can do, and all that's important. But when you're first creating, I think it's as important as anything else is for you not to think, because overthinking is just going to destroy, really, any of that beauty or passion that, you know, you're really trying to get in there. So, I mean, and I think that's, you know, the hardest thing for all of us in whatever we do is to try, you know, we're our worst critics. So I think to try to shut that part of our heads off is the challenge. And if we can do that, there's, like, so much in there that's really pretty, like, wonderful that we can get out.
Very interesting. So which character do you identify most with in the book?
Oh, it depends on the time of day. You know, seriously, I think that sometimes I feel like, you know, the Miriam who, you know, is like, you know, she starts off in the book as like, you know, not really liking who she is. She wants to be someone else, all that. I think I've grown a little past that a little bit, but I do so have my moments like that. And then, you know, there's, you know, the grandmother who I think is the wise one who's kind of, you know, lived through it all in a sense and knows exactly, you know, that she does know everything, like you said before, that you still have to keep learning. So it's kind of, so I think at different points I can kind of identify, and especially I also identify a lot, I think also often with Gianna as, you know, being the kind of the supportive friend who's like, great and outspoken and, like, you know, and everyone thinks that, you know, like, you have no fear at all, but you're really kind of scared to death on the inside, but on the outside you're showing the world. So I can identify a lot with that too often. So I think, you know, I don't know how much you believe in astrology, but I'm a Gemini, so I have that, like, three personalities. Instead of having two personalities, I think I got about seven. So, you know, so I try to keep it under control. People are very close to me. They kind of know how, like, you know, wacky I can be, but at different times. But I guess in a lot of ways, and I think that's what you said before about the transition of writing in a young adult voice, I think there's that teenager in all of us, and I don't think it ever goes away, and I think that's why I identify a lot. And I think almost every adult person I know, and I don't know if it's because of the type of books that are coming out now, but they're all reading young adult books, all of them. It's the only books they read. It's their favorite stories. I mean, there's just something that we all identify with that, like, that the newness and the first of things happening and just the courage that we have and conviction, you know, when we're that age is just pretty, like, amazing, you know. And I tell people, you know, there was an expression, I don't actually know how old you are, but there was an expression, and you know, like, they used to say in the 60s, I mean, I was a little bit, I'm not that old, but not that so old, but anyway, in the 60s, that don't trust, you know, anyone that's over 30. Well, I kind of say don't trust anyone that's under 30 when it comes to their politics, because it's very easy to have conviction and believe in what's right and do, you know, have all these ideas about what you're going to do. And then when you get older is when we start, like, backing off from a lot of things. And, you know, we get lazier about, you know, thinking it's important to recycle, or, you know, or we vote not based on, like, that we think it's important for kids to have a good education, but because we don't want our taxes to be higher, you know. I mean, you know, these kind of things start happening. And so I kind of think if you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s, and I know a lot of amazing people, and you still kind of have that kind of conviction of a teenager, then, you know, that's really amazing. So,
Well, first and foremost, there's an inner child in every one of us, and I'm just a mere child. And it's safe to say that there's a little bit of you in every one of the character, because your personality has been sprinkled over the pages of your book.
Men, the male characters as well, you know. And No, I think it's true. I mean, I think that everything that we write, fiction or not fiction, there's a little of us in all of the things we write. Mm-hmm. Even when we're writing about, you know, characters that do things that are nothing like we'd ever do or whatever. I mean, we have to kind of feel there's something about some experience we've had or some emotion that goes into our characters in that way. So in that way, yeah, I guess it's true. So
interesting.
At the same time, and for everyone who's writing out there, I really want people, you know, to know that your characters don't have to be likable. They don't have to be people, I mean, in the way that, you know, you don't have to want to take them to lunch. Mm-hmm. They just have to be people that are real and that are flawed and that people want to, like, are interested enough in to know what their stories are. And I think the thing that sometimes we do is, especially new writers, is we protect our characters so much and we don't let them make mistakes and we don't want them to have flaws because, mm-hmm. you know, we're protecting them. And I think that's, like, that's very hard to get around, but that's mm-hmm. the way you're gonna ruin your stories that way because people are real, and you know we all want, you know, when we're reading stories and we enter those worlds, you know, whether it's fantasy or it's about something that's happening, you know, in what we call the real world, because it's kind of hard to figure out what's real sometimes in this mm-hmm. today's age, but that we want people to, like, we want to worry for the character and we want to see them fall down on their face and make mistakes, and because mm-hmm. it's the things that we relate to, and it's also when they get up and they overcome that or they make these transitions, and, you know, we want to believe that can happen to us and in the world too. So I think that's also the reason why I write, you know, because mm-hmm. I do believe that we can change, you know, the world, you know, whether it's one book or one story at a time. And I think we all have that ability to make that happen.
Very interesting. So you're basically saying that character identification by the readers is very, very important.
They have to, in some ways, you know, even if it's, even if it's a character that Hannibal Lecter, you know, I mean, the fact that that person wrote a character who does these atrocious things, you know, he's a serial killer,
right.
who eats people, but he's got enough humanity that you actually kind of, you know, can feel for him, you know, and that you can see how the humanity in him, even though, you know, you don't, like, condone and wouldn't actually, of course, invite him over for dinner, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that as writers or as artists, to show the complexity of humans is difficult, but that's, I think that's why we do it, right? I mean, I think it's kind of mm-hmm. Why we should be doing it, you know. I mean, even the work you do, you know, on your radio program, I mean, you know, you're transcending, you know, everyday life by taking everyday life and showing to the world why it's important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a story in every day and every moment, and I don't think that a lot of times, you know, for these stories to be important, they don't have to take place in the future, all those could be great, or they don't have to be about, I mean, look, I love, you know, vampires, but I don't think the story has to be, you know, about vampires or about something like that for us to kind of, you know, want to read about or relate to or, you know, although
just,
I am.
You're just using the vampire to tell the story because it is the story behind the story, ultimately, that's more important.
Exactly. And that's the same thing with all those stories. It's the vampire or it's the zombie or it's, I mean, look at the Hunger Games, you know, which is very futuristic, but it's talking about the same themes in some ways that through the story that I'm telling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all about people, you know, trying to overcome obstacles in their lives, you know, and trying to, like, you know, defend the people that they care for and that they love,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we're doing every day. I mean, and all the news reports that we see, and right now we're in a political campaign election, but with the bottom behind that, you know, I mean, the bottom line to that and what's behind that story are all the people's lives that are affected by these things. So I guess, yes, what you said before, I think it's important that we identify or in some way care enough about these characters because we see that they're real, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So why is it important for teens to read Rebels by Accident?
Why is it important? I would think is important because I would like, what I hope they walk away from is I'd like to feel that, well, one, I think it's important to read things that are enjoyable, and I really hope that they find it fun. But I also would like teens, you know, if they are Egyptian Americans, maybe they can find something they can relate to, which I think is very important. But if they're not, that they can, you know, just learn about another culture and another world that is also similar to them, to their own. But most importantly is, you know, when we write, we don't necessarily think about what the message or the theme is of the books we write. But I think, you know, afterwards when we really look at it and when we're trying to kind of tweak our work, we see, okay, so what's the most important message here? And I think the message that I hope this book would give teens is that they are important and they can make a difference, and they do make a difference, and that they shouldn't let, you know, anybody judge them, and they shouldn't also you know, judge themselves based on the negative stuff that they may hear from others, and that basically that really that they are inspired, that not only are they, you know, will they be inspired hopefully by some of the characters in the book, but they themselves are inspiration, you know. We all have a lot of, you know, power and so much to give, but I think especially young adults, I mean, there's so much, like, hope that I see for those kids, that I don't always know if they see it for themselves, and if they can kind of see the kind of things that they can do and how they can also change the world, that would be wonderful. And, you know, and then the bottom line, to make it easy, it's fun, and, you know, it's a love story, and I love love stories. I hate, you know, to admit it, but, like, I love things that are, you know, I'm a little bit sappy, and, you know, and I think, you know, and I know the funny thing is a lot of people said to me, well, you know, boys aren't going to read it because it's a girl story, and, you know, it's about these two girls, they fall in love and all that. And then, you know, what my son actually said to me was, well, don't worry, my boys will read it, but they'll read it on a Kindle so that nobody can see the cover. I said, okay, that's fine. Which apparently is true for a lot of those books that they think only girls are reading. Anyway, so.
Very interesting. How about for the rest of the readers? What would you like your readers to gain from reading your book?
Well, my joke, you know, at 48 and finally getting my first novel out is, like, you don't have to read it, just buy it. But the reality is, I think the same message. I mean, I think that I would like them to really, like, see, you know, feel, like, inspired and hope, you know. I mean, there's a lot of sadness in the book, but I really want them to be able to kind of, like, walk away. Well, mostly that they, with characters, I want them not to even think of these people's characters. It would be great if they walk away, like, thinking about them, like, I know my favorite books I've read that, you know, I still carry them around in my heart like they're real people. And it also, especially for people here in the States, you know, to get a little bit of a glimpse of, you know, what these people in Egypt are like, and to realize, hey, you know, they're our neighbors. You know, I mean, they're here in the United States, but they're also each country, we're all neighbors, you know, and and if people can kind of realize that, I think that would be pretty amazing. And that it's not too late, whether you're, like you said before, which I thought was very beautiful, that, you know, we're always learning, you know. And, you know, if they can walk away just, you know, learning a little bit more about life, you know, and about themselves, that's, you know, a great thing. Now, I know it's a tall order, and, you know, but I, like I said earlier, when I think we started, that writers, we have huge egos. So, you know, we're not just trying to kind of, like, you know, make a little bit of a difference. We want to, like, you know, change the whole world, right? So.
That's fabulous.
We want everybody to love us, yes. Yeah, well, yeah, it's true. Well, I know, I tell, like, student writers, you know, when you get critique on your work, even if people are saying things that you might not feel as positive, you can use everything in a way, and, you know, and you don't want people to say that they just love your book, because you can't learn from that. But the reality is, that's what we want people to say. They love our book. They love everything that we write, and we don't have to change anything. But, of course, that's not always going to be the case, and, you know, and for everything, it's a learning experience. And hopefully the next book I write, you know, will even, you know, I'll learn more from that. And that's the other thing I should say, which I should have said from the beginning. Writing also is a way for me to learn. You know, and I just read this wonderful piece by my mentor, Myra Goldberg. I have this blog, guest blog, where writers go on and they write about why they write. And she, you know, and her whole piece is just about the fact that she writes to learn. And I think that's kind of why, and to discover. And that's kind of why I think I do it also. And so hopefully whenever I write next, I discover something else that's amazing and wonderful and about something.
Fantastic. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Oh, well, okay, the easiest things to, well, you know, the book is available on Amazon, and a lot of it will be available in a lot of local bookstores. But to find out about me and also the book, if they go to patriciadunnauthor.com, that's my website. And I would love anybody who wants to tweet me at She Writes. WRITES, just She Writes is my Twitter name. And again, patriciadunnauthor.com is my website, and we try to keep it as updated as possible.
Wonderful. And what's your tweet handle again?
She Writes.
With a C, right?
No. She Writes, just the word She, S-H-E-W-R-I-T-E-S, She Writes.
Wonderful. How has writing Rebels by Accident impacted you personally?
Oh, I mean, I guess in some ways it's been transforming. I think just the process of writing the book, and right now the process of, you know, putting it out into the world has been. It's been this kind of wonderful roller coaster in a sense. I mean, sometimes it's that feeling of like, you know, you're on the roller coaster and you just kind of want to throw up so you can feel better, but you can't because it's so, I mean, because it is all that fear and nervousness. And then sometimes it's, you know, a wonderful feeling. And I've also been able to, I've just met so many amazing people just through not only the writing of it, but, you know, books are not written by one person. There's that myth that you kind of like these writers are alone, and communities write books. And I think that, you know, the editors I've worked with, and even, you know, the people who are helping me put the book out, and, you know, my best friend and, you know, and kind of business partner and my one of Marie, Alexander Soysis is, you know, together we've been able to like meet so many wonderful people and like just learn so much about not just the publishing world, but, you know, just meet writers and artists. And I think writing this book has kind of, you know, I was an activist for many, many years. I believed I could change the world and make a difference. And like I said, you get older and, you know, you get like, you know, stuck in like, you know, just trying to make enough money to, you know, pay your rent and all that, that you kind of you forget that you can do that. And I think putting this book out has made me kind of believe again that I can still make a difference in some ways. Maybe not change the whole world, but if I could just do a little bit to make it somewhat better, that would really be a lot.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I think it's very simple. You know, 10 years ago, it would have had about 1,000 ingredients. And right now, I say, you know, it should be, you know, a half part or equal part, you know, 5 cups, 10 cups of, like, have friends in your and people in your life that give to you as much as you give to them. People who you, like, you know, when you can't hold the faith because things are too hard, they can hold the faith for you. And I think the other half of the recipe is patience. and really basically just learning not to hold on and not give up. And letting go when you need to, and but, you know, kind of keeping those goals in mind. And now that I'm saying this, another part, which is something that I'm still learning, is live every moment. You know, I don't want to say like your last, because it is way too cliche, and as a writer I'm like, oh, but that's kind of what I'm saying, is like, because it's sweet, even with this experience of putting this book out and having this opportunity right now to even do this radio program and to talk to all these people, it's so easy to kind of like think about the next thing we have to do and mm-hmm. not enjoy where we are right now and mm-hmm. not spend the time with our families or our children because we're so worried about, you know, I mean, our bodies may be here, but our minds are like on mm-hmm. the next thing we have to do. So I think if you could really like be in the moment as much as possible, and you're not going to every all the time, but that would, I think, add more to people's life than, you know, all the organic food in the world, you know. yeah. And I eat as much organic as I can, but, you know, and I think it would help us and help me, too, to not have as much stress either. So I think that would kind of be. So I think, you know, patience with yourself and with others,
mm-hmm.
You know, love, but having people who love you as much as you love them is really important in your life, mm-hmm. people that you can have. And the third one is just be present, you know, live in that mm-hmm. moment, enjoy what you have.
Wonderful. Basically, it's to enjoy life, and in order for you to experience the quality of life that you seek is to enjoy the present moment.
Yeah. See, that was beautiful. That's why you do this so well, because you can listen to people like me ramble on forever and put it in that concise. Yes, exactly. So you're what we would call a poet. That's the novelist. That's why we ramble on and on and on. The poets, you get right down to it.
All you have to say, yeah, exactly like what he said, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ditto. Yeah, exactly. See, I should have you just follow me around and I could say, could you say exactly what I mean? Yeah.
Thank you, though. I appreciate
that.
But that's a wonderful recipe for living, by the way. As an accomplished writer, what three things can you suggest to new writers to fine-tune their craft?
Well, the main thing that I could say is like to fine-tune their craft is be willing, okay, to write as much as possible. You will sometimes have to, and you know, I have had to do this with every character I ever develop. You will have to write 100 pages or 200 pages just to get to know a character and her story, and those, and you'll have to be willing to cut that all because you needed to know that as the writer, but it may not be necessary for the story. Mm-hmm. But you know, find the other main real thing that I would also tell people to do is get yourself in a group with other writers who get you and who understand your work. You don't need to, I mean, putting yourself in it, because we learn as much and we learn more from what we do well as from what we don't do as well. But we always know what we do wrong, and because if we can learn what we do well, which is very much part of the Sarah Lawrence College educational belief system, which I like really believe in, we can keep repeating that and we can really develop off that. And to learn what we do well, a lot of times we won't see it. You need to be around writers who will understand you, who will read your work, and would be honest with you, but honest in a supportive way. And I think, you know, I just recently wrote an essay about writing support groups and how important it is to have those people around you who understand you and your work, and that are going to, especially when you're writing novels, that, you know, it's a long process and you're going to need that kind of support along the way. And I think the other thing is, be willing to revise and to try things. I mean, being in workshops and with other writers or instructors, all that stuff is going to be great. But the only way you really can kind of even get the most out of those experiences is to write as much as possible and to try new things. And to go into things with an open mind. I mean, it's great to have an outline, and I think that helps me a lot after I've kind of let a more freer process happen. But you should be willing to, you know, if your character or your story is going in another direction, you know, like follow it and see what happens. And that means putting in the time. So as one great, you know, writer once told me, you know, she was a mentor of mine, and she said the best advice I could give any writer is keep your expenses low. Because if you want the time, to, you know, it's, you don't make a lot of money off of this usually, and if you want the time to write, you've got to have the time to write. So, you know, if your expenses are low and you have cheap rent, you know, I don't know where you find that these days, but if you do that, then, you know, you can put the time in. And, you know, and the other thing is don't beat yourself up. If you're not, find out what you, and this is, I think, probably, I think I'm on to like five, you said three. Mm-hmm. But most of us have no idea what our writing process is, or we don't respect who we are as writers. And we think that if we don't get up at 5 o'clock every morning and write, that we're not real writers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are going to write better. I mean, I tell people, keep a little journal of, like, you know, how you feel when you write and figure out what works best for you.
Mm-hmm.
The only person I know who does great at 5 o'clock in the morning is my friend Alex. That's because she grew up in a farm. I mean, she gets up at 5 o'clock anyway. You know, that's why that works for her. You know, some of us are better, like me, at writing at 11 o'clock at night, you know. And
right.
I think, and I don't write every day because, you know, I have a million things I do in my life, but also what works better is I'll write a little bit every other day, but then I'll, like, block out times where I can take a few hours and do more of that. So it's really, mm-hmm. but it took me a long time to respect that process. And I think if you could figure out the kind of writer you are and what works best for you and you stop beating yourself up, you'll get a lot more pages done.
Fantastic. Well, that's wonderful. Patricia, thank you for the great recipe for living that you have shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be the founder of My Boogie Baby, Wendy Pittman. Wendy and I will be discussing about the latest back-to-school fashion featuring trendy must-have fashion wares for young girls ages 4 to 14. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Patricia, thank you again and have a great day.
No, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.